O Shonaka, although the supreme Brahmastra weapon released by Ashwatthama was irresistible and without check or counteraction, it was neutralized and foiled and confronted by the strength of Vishnu, Lord Krishna. So the purport that Prabhupada says, and actually again, just for the perspective, of course, you know, we're trying to hear about something which will be able to protect us in our current difficult situation like that. And that of course, is, you know, the conversation between the sages of Naimisharanya. The sages of Naimisharanya are also trying to do the same thing, come up with some kind of shelter for Kali Yuga. So then they ask Sudha Goswami, you know, what is this? And he explains that it is Srimad Bhagavatam, just doing what we're doing. That people should be adequately protected, have a proper perspective, how to deal with things like that. Because the Kali Yuga is not bad. The Kali Yuga is for a certain purpose, you know. And if we know how to have a proper relationship with it, by proper intelligence, by proper hearing, then we won't we'll experience the Kali Yuga as, you know, a very, very nice time. Yeah. So, in the course of that, Srimad Bhagavatam was glorified, and the principal speaker is going to be Maharaj Sukadeva Goswami, and the inquirer and the principal audience is going to be Maharaj Maharaj Pariksit. And Sudha Goswami says he heard at the same time. He was there. He didn't ask questions, but he was in the classroom when it was being spoken. And was, I guess, very blessed to have, you know, so good association have someone have, you know, asking good questions like that. So, but he's going to give a little more information now on who are all these people. What is the circumstance, you know? Well, why do we need Bhagavatam if Krishna is still here? So we go into the history now. We've been doing that right after the battles, you know, Ashwatthama killed the sons of Draupadi, and, you know, then the Pandavas and everybody else went down to the river and offered proper oblations to the departed people. And horse sacrifices. Well, I guess the horse sacrifices are performed now also, because somewhere here... I think they're being performed. Wow, it's so confusing. Yeah. Maybe not yet. Yeah. Because I guess what's going to happen is Krishna's going to try and leave and he'll stay. And then if our horse sacrifices will be performed and Bhishma Dev's departure will occur, then I think Krishna may leave for Dwarka and come back, you know, for the birth of Maharaj Pariksit. Yeah, it's a little bit confusing the time scale here. But something like that. It's okay. And so then, in this part of this process, for a second time, Ashwatthama appears, you know, throws another Brahmastra weapon after his bad experience with the first one. And so Vidagra Prabhu was suggesting, which I was already, you know, beginning to think a little bit, but he was amplified it, of course, that Ashwatthama was mad, just insane with the whole situation. Everybody he knows is dead. His father has been, you know, murdered by these people, and he's been, like, publicly humiliated and everything else. And so, even though Krishna respects him, it seems, you know, a little temporary insanity like that, you know. So maybe that's one lesson right away, that our dealings with devotees, we shouldn't be surprised if sometimes there's a little bit of temporary insanity because of the difficulties that we're all going through. Like myself, I seem trying to do this class today, I'm having trouble with the internet. We tried to correct that, and it was working, and then, you know, we tried to lock on, tried to test it, that collapsed, and the Skype collapsed, and then people started coming in to take the bed out from under me that I was sitting on. And they were going to be smashing the stuff all over the room, so I had to put everything away, and I ran downstairs and in the basement. So please forgive me if I have some temporary insanity. Okay. So as part of this whole thing, then, the Pandavas are raising their weapons to try and save themselves, and especially to try and save Maharaj Pariksit, you know. And but at that point, the Krishna doesn't wait for anybody else. So here's in the purport, okay, because it was stopped by the energy of Vishnu, even though it's irresistible, uncheckable, and unfoilable. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Prabhupada says, that the Brahma Jyoti of the glowing transcendental effulgence is resting on Lord Sri Krishna. Okay, now, for all of our senior students, whenever Prabhupada does this, of course, we should all stop and figure out which verse it is. And then maybe even make a note of it. And in the evening, we can kind of look at that in our Gita class. And that way, we'll automatically be studying the Bhagavad Gita or reviewing it the way that the teacher uses it. So this is, I think, the verse in the Three Modes of Material Nature, which is chapter 14. And then right near the very end, it says, Brahmano hi pratistaham. That's all I can remember. But right near the end of chapter 14. In Bhagavad Gita, it said that the Brahma Jyoti, or the glowing transcendental effulgence, is resting on Lord Sri Krishna. There it is. Brahmano hi pratistaham. Pratista means to fix, like that. This Brahmana certainly is fixed upon me. Okay. In other words, the glowing effulgence known as Brahma Tejas is nothing but the rays of the Lord, just as the sun's rays are rays of the sun disk. So, this Brahma weapon also, although materially irresistible, could not surpass the strength of the Lord. Because it's like somebody expecting Krishna's right hand to attack his left hand. This is just the Brahmastra weapon, you know, is Krishna. Krishna's energy. So Ashwatthama is throwing it against the Pandavas who are protected by Krishna. So he must be insane. You know, anybody with half a brain in their head would know that Krishna is the source of the power of the Brahmastra weapon, and he's the friend of the Pandavas. You know, yeah. Okay, let's go to the next slide here. Number 5. The weapon called Brahmastra, Prabhupada said, released by Ashwatthama, was neutralized. Yeah, neutralized. And foiled by Lord Sri Krishna by his own energy. That is to say, he did not wait for any other's help because he is absolute. Right. So one thing I've, again, a technical kind of thing, is that if you just look up the words that you don't really know, you know, that Prabhupada uses, it seems that you'll develop an incredible English vocabulary. Like, I literally, I'm going to look up this word foiled. In fencing, the long, skinny things that they fence with are called foils, like that, you know. So I wonder what it means. Another one is baffled. Baffles are things you put in big water tanks, like on milk trucks or oil trucks, and so the little vertical things, so that the water becomes, when you stop, all the water and all the milk in the milk truck doesn't just come up and just keep on going and just crush the driver and go out into the street. So all the little baffles are in there, little like planes that keep it from flowing forward continuously. You know? So to foil it, what does that mean? You know, I get a chance here to increase our vocabulary and talk like Prabhupada. Was neutralized and foiled by Lord Sri Krishna's own energy. That is to say, he did not wait for any other's help because he is absolute. So very simple purport. Yeah. And I think this the general principle is, of course, this the protection from Krishna, like that. You know. And so if you go to the next slide, I found this very interesting picture. And think about it for a second there. How many people can, you know, recognize what this picture is? And of course, if you're not on the audio, like on the visual thing, it'd be very difficult, you know. So what it is, it's like a picture of an interior of a very elegant hall with beautiful high, you know, vaulting, six-story, maybe marble ceilings, and beautiful, you know, columns and rich textured marble and balcony windows. And then there's in front is kind of like a scene, like an opening onto a stage, but it's opening onto the outside, but it's big like the stage of a theater. And there's a really big demon there, knocking down columns. And he's got a face like kind of like a pumpkin, with big fangs and horns and pointed ears, and lots of arms, skulls, swords, everything else, you know. And then inside, you know, here where we are, There's ladies, you know, running away screaming, and one big white bull coming and knocking people down also, and priests in disarray, like that, you know. So it's kind of obvious to figure out we're in a lot of trouble right here, like that. And of course, this is the Daksha Yagna, and Daksha created this situation where from his own hair he released, I think it was Virabhadra, like that, and that's the demon coming, you know. And so we're always being harassed by these, you know, different problems. And sometimes we may have a big problem. Like right now we're right on the edge of this extinction of all the honeybees. All the honeybees are going to drop down below the level of, you know, of reality. California, their biggest crop is almonds, you know, and it requires bees. So last year, scraping together every single honeybee they did, they had just barely enough to fertilize it. So now the Department of Agriculture, the guy said, basically we're just one throw of the dice away from, you know, from catastrophe. They're trying to find out what it is. You know, is it the cell phones that are causing it and confusing the communication system of the bees? Or is it the, some kind of new pesticide, which is supposed to be non-lethal, you know? So the last minute, of course, we discover if science saves us at the last minute, that may be like a big catastrophe for us. Because then people will think, oh, we got shelter from science again. We were really worried. We really had problems. We had anxiety, but we shouldn't have been worried because science will always save us at the last minute. Like that. I've cooked my brains, cooked my liver, cooked my kidneys by all kinds of, you know, drugs and illicit relations, everything. You know, cook your mind, cook your brain, cook your liver, cucaracha, like that. But I'm still thinking. I have direct stories like this, devotees who work in the hospital. The people coming in there, you know, bleeding from every orifice, and they say, patch me up, doctor. Patch me up, doc. Doctors are just, one doctor refused to do it. Patient came in, the guy said, in his clinic, and said, forget it, you made a complete mess of your body, you know. So then the guy went home, and he went into like this and that problem, so the ambulance came and took him off to the hospital, and the same doctor was on call that night and came in, and here was the guy, you know, an emergency, so he had to treat him, you know, like that, you know. So, you know, we're being confronted with these big catastrophes, all the bees in the world disappearing. And if Krishna doesn't let science save us, then there's going to be no apples. Something like 30% of the stuff we eat is going to be gone, you know. And that won't kill anybody, does it seem like. But it may put more pressure on them to rethink their, you know, their philosophy of life, you know, like that. Seems to me like Krishna's putting a lot of people on, pressure on people right now so that we can have a chance to preach, you know. We have to become an institution. And then if we can organize an institution, like the Mormon Church or somebody with our own land and farms and communities and basically our, well, what do you call it, like majority presence in one state, majority presence in our own villages. In Mormon land in Utah, the sheriff, the judges, you know, the bankers, they're all Mormons. Yeah, you know. Yeah. And so it's not a Mormon city, but let's face it. So we get a little bit together on that level, then people will listen to what we have to say. And we have to get it together, a little bit of management and stuff like that for people to really respect us. Otherwise, there's so many philosophies. So we're all being confronted by these big demons, like here we have Virabhadra. But also, that's not just that. It's just every day, you know, every minute or something, every minute. Well, maybe every minute. It's every hour at least. Every hour at least, not a doubt. You know, we have some kind of anxiety. At least I do. Maybe somebody else doesn't have them. You know? I went out for a walk this morning. We're in Richmond, Virginia, so we're like right now it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So I went out for a walk. It's a new construction area out in the forest and upper class homes. And just around the corner, these guys are knocking down trees with bulldozers. And I was walking over there in nothing but my dhoti and my uttariya, not even a shirt. Fresh air, sunlight, chanting. And then wondering, oh my God, are these guys going to come over and run me over? Like, you know, who's that perverted pervert in the pink skirt over there. let's just kind of back up and squash him, you know. So, and then I was looking at the plants, and then I recognized that some of the plants on the side of the road were actually poison ivy, which last time I got it on me, I had to go on steroids 2 times to save my life, my pita environment. Okay, so that, you know, what, this is like one anxiety after another. We're being we need shelter continuously from big destruction, and also continuously from different things, anxieties and fears in our mind, like that. You know, so the Pandavas are in the same situation like that. Let's go next slide here, and then we have another demon. this was Tuasta's demon. What was he called? He was called Vritasura. He was called Vritasura. Yeah. I guess Tuasta's demon, yeah. And he came out of the fire, and then he's actually in the Rig Veda. Because the Bhagavatam is like an anthology. It's just collecting stuff from every place. So the story of Tuasta's a guru. That's the name of the demon. Vritasura, yeah. So Vritasura is there in the Rig Veda, one of the oldest stories like that. Then the right side is another slide, which kind of looks like, I couldn't tell what it was, but kind of looks like just like called Draupadi or Uttara running to the Pandavas there. A very kind of classical painting like that. Yeah. So go down one more. And here we have Giriraj, Ki Dai, Giridhari Ki Dai. And there's Krishna standing up on the rock. Excuse me. And the left hand of his little finger, left finger of his little hand, he's lifting up the whole Govardhan Hill, like that. You know? And the right side, you can see Indra there, very proud, you know, proud of his, that's me, you know, just lacking oxygen. You know? Very proud of his opulence, his powers like that, you know. As you begin to grow up, for example, you may discover that you have, for example, like Srinivas here, a devotee here, he has a daughter, and I think she's about maybe 12, you know, and the boy is about 8, and is explaining that they were swimming, that she actually won the state competition for her swimming, and, you know, girls of her age. And his son then came in fourth place in backstroke, like that, 7 to 9 year old kids, you know. So you begin to discover this. You discover that, for example, somebody discovers they can just pick up languages like anything, you know. And somebody else discovers that they can, that everybody likes them, that everybody talks to them, and that they can really, you know, really give good advice to people about how to deal with life and that kind of stuff. And then somebody else discovers that they're, athletic abilities are just beyond belief, you know. Krishna Tanu, one devotee, he's from Argentina, and he asked me, he's a pilot, you know. He flies 747s for Argentinian Airlines. And he said, any boy you ask, you know, is going to want to fly an airplane. If you ask him, he'd like to fly an airplane. And I was thinking about it, and yeah, it's probably true, maybe some strange people, but basically, yeah, everybody, every kid would like to fly an airplane. And he said, out of those, of course, very few actually are qualified, have the abilities to fly it. Yeah? And out of those who can become pilots, it's even more difficult to become an airline pilot, because then you have to fly, you're risking a lot of people's lives. Where if you're flying a cargo plane, basically you're going to kill yourself and 3 more people and lose a lot of mail or something. And he said, out of those who fly passenger planes, he says, somebody who can fly a 747, you know, he said it's even more rare because you have to have, because, you know, the risk and everything else involved. So psychologically, physically, everything else. And you have to have super reflexes because there's still not a, when he was telling me this, he said there's still not an automatic guidance system fast enough to put a 747 down safely in rough weather if it gets too bad like that. So it comes down that people are still faster, you know. So just by nature, his reflexes are so fast that he could sit there teasing cobras and that kind of stuff, you know, mongoose. You know? So you begin to discover these things as Indra grows up. And what to speak of that, he's first place, he's got all these abilities, you know. Then after that, when he becomes the Indra, he gets even more, you know, like that and so on. So then he becomes totally intoxicated by all this, and his intelligence gradually becomes more and more stupid. You know, Maya doesn't care if she takes you down one step at a time. Something I realized. It doesn't have to be a big fall down. Usually it's not. It's just one every day. You know, she makes you lose one principle. Like, for example, like I always get up for Mangalarti, okay, now I'm becoming a little lax. I always get my Gayatri's done. Well, I'm not doing that. You know, I always, you know, distribute at least 10 books a week, get them out there. You know, I'm not doing that. And okay, so, you know, one step at a time, you know, Maya can take us down. So somehow or other, Indra became so confused and intoxicated and arrogant, you know, that he became the source of trouble, you know, for other people like that. You know? So a lot of times the shelter we need, actually ultimately what is the shelter? It's almost always personal. It's either like our family members or our nation or our community or even the demigods are ultimately people. You know? Yeah. And so, you know, there we see Krishna gives shelter, you know. He gave shelter for the Vrijabhasis. He's giving shelter for the Pandavas, like that. And so we can turn to God. So many stories like that. People that their mother will tell them or somebody will tell them, I have to go now, this or that, you know. But you can always pray to God, and he will always help you. You know? And so I remember, maybe our audience too here, other devotees, they also remember at some point, when they were very little, they had different problems, and at some point they got this conviction that, yeah, there is this guy named God, and he does appear to exist, and you can pray to him, and he will help you, like that. You know, maybe kind of a good point at the end here. Some people can actually maybe mention when they got the pretty much conviction that God would save them from death. I remember myself, I was very young. You know, I was maybe like about 5 years old. Different things, and then I realize, okay, yeah, he's there, and this and that. You know, I got that kind of conviction. Okay, next slide. Then we have, I'm waiting for it to move, it won't move, okay. It's been a very nice prayer by the Vrijabhasis. Let Krishna, who is so kind, beautiful, and merciful, protect us. When angry Indra sent torrents of rain, accompanied by showers of ice blocks and high winds, wow, bombing. Can you imagine being outside with these ice blocks coming down, you know? Krishna merely took compassion upon us and saved us and our families, cows, and valuable possessions by picking up Govardhan Hill. Just as a child picks up a mushroom. And I bet the valuable possessions were all for Krishna. You know, Krishna liked to hear me play my accordion. Krishna liked to see us dressed like this. You know, yeah, that's what makes him valuable. He saved us so wonderfully. May he continue to glance mercifully over us and our cows. May we live peacefully under the protection of wonderful Krishna. So a lot of times it doesn't take, like, you know, someone to lift Govardhan Hill. It just takes a glance. You know, we're worried. We're in anxiety. We have fear. You know, we're not suffering. We have fear. And fear becomes because anxiety, because the future is uncertain. And so then Krishna kind of looks at us and smiles and nods his head. What are you worried about? Come on, you know, we can take care of this, you know. And then we're happy again. You know, actually, then we're looking at it as a friend, as a fun challenge, these things that come, these problems that come like that, you know. Okay, let's move down one more here. Okay, let me ask you the Prabhupada, because we think it's nice. This is Vyasa Puja, you know, just yesterday. And thinking about, you know, taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada. These are some pictures I've collected. I like, you know. The one on the left there, Prabhupada, looks like Prabhupada has just finished the class, you know. And he's outside, nice wooden platform. And he's just about to step down onto the deck. And his shoes are there. And his feet are kind of exposed. But it's always like me, I think this picture, like, you know, it's like, okay, class is over. Okay, here we go on Sankirtan. Prabhupada is just about to put both feet down right on Maya. Stop Maya. Like that. So very nice picture. Yeah. And then other pictures, one of a couple pictures, Prabhupada's leaning back. And one picture is kind of funny. And this one he's kind of looking disgusted. It's kind of like annihilating Maya with his kind of, his hands kind of like a rapier or like a sword like that. kind of very casually. You know, just annihilating the biggest problems and demons like that. You know? And then we include the prayers, Namaste Nara Shinghaya, Yato Nisingho, Parato Nisingho. Because people may know this, but I heard it a long time ago, you know, from Bhagavad, I think that somebody threw a cherry bomb, one of these like real loud explosives people use at 4th of July and stuff, at the temple in Los Angeles, the old temple, and it bounced off the window or something with this loud explosion. The Prabhupada said, what is that? And the devotee said, oh, there are neighbors throwing these, like, you know, explosives at us, you know, festival explosives. And Prabhupada said, all right, starting now you should chant these two prayers. So Namaste Nandasinghaya, Tabakara Kamalabare. After every artik, you should chant these two prayers, Lord Nishringadeva. And as I understood, he explained that one prayer was for protection of ISKCON, protection of the movement, and the other prayer was for protection of the spiritual master, like that. You know? So I don't know which is which, but Prabhupada expected us to protect him also. You know? There was a very, very nice letter from Prabhupada on the Gurukula. He came to San Francisco because Jayatirthaji had been there, and it came, and he already gone back to Los Angeles, though. And so I got the letter, and I called him, and I said, Prabhu, should I forward this letter to you? And he said, no, you know, right away, open it, read it immediately. Oh, wow. So I learned something about being attached to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was telling him, okay, you should move, the preaching in Berkeley is good, you move there because you've made the endeavor from San Francisco. Yeah, the Gurukula should be closed. Everybody moved to India. It's the only place you can actually run it. And so he wrote a whole letter, you know. Then he finished off, and the letter finished off saying, you cannot exist without my mercy. And I was kind of like shocked at the harshness of it in some ways, it seemed. But at the same time, though, I was just surrendering, accepting, yes, it's a fact, Prabhupada, we cannot exist without your mercy, you know. And the next line was, and I cannot exist without your mercy. Yeah. And he said this mutual respect, this mutual love is Krishna consciousness. Wow, such a nice, simple definition of Krishna consciousness. Yeah. You cannot exist without my mercy, and I cannot exist without your mercy. That's the way it is. There's nobody so big, so powerful, you know, in ISKCON, who can make it without our mercy. Hey, fella, calm down. Yeah. And we can't make it without their mercy. You know? Such an idea of the spiritual world. So then, what can we do for Prabhupada? How can we help? How can we give him a shelter? How can we give him protection like that? You know? So next slide. So we have a couple of our pictures of Prabhupada. Share them on Yasa Puja. Of course, the one on the right, I think, is one of the most super classic of all classical pictures of Prabhupada. This is the one sitting there with his chatter on. I think this came when he actually came to the United States like that. And above it, we have a picture of Bhaktisiddhanta with a very classical picture. He's sitting with his bee bag in his hand with his uttariya over his, like a cape over his shoulders, keep warm. And it's interesting because you look at this picture is that Bhaktisiddhanta's right foot, I don't think I reversed this. Yeah, his right foot is on his left thigh. But a picture of Bhakti Vinoda is the other way. Yeah. And it describes Krishna sometimes with one thigh, and it has a different effect. Then Bhaktisiddhanta, this is common too. You'll see pictures of our acharyas, Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhakti Vinoda, Thakur. They have a bead bag in one hand and books in the other. So it's interesting. The books are important. The books are central, but don't give up chanting. You know? You know, the japa, yagnanam japa, yagno shmi, like that. You know, the chanting is the basis, even of the books, of the sankirtan, everything else. It's such a big book, Bhaktisiddhanta has in front of him. Unbelievable, you know. Maybe I don't think it's the Bhagavatam. Maybe it's the Bhagavatam with the commentaries, like that. So, Prabhupada also has his Srila Prabhupada, you know, to give him shelter. And then we can understand Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in front of Gaur Kishore. He feels like a little boy, like helpless in every way. When Gaur Kishore Babaji left his body, I think Bhaktisiddhanta was like, in some ways, kind of like devastated or something. He didn't preach for so long, you know. He just retreated to Mayapur and engaged in bhajan, chanting and everything else like that. But then somehow or other, as his leela or whatever, he adjusted everything, and then he came out, and then it was like, absolute, unequivocal, irrevocable war on Maya, like that. That when he came out, So, if we saw Bhakti Siddhanta, I think if we just looked at us, we would all have complete collapse in every single way it's ever described of anybody collapsing, like that, so on. Lose control of all our bodily functions, everything else, if he gave us one serious look. And so Prabhupada at that point might just give a big smile on his face, okay, now you see what kind of guru we have in charge of this movement. Do you have any doubts? So we have such shelter, through the parampara, and Srila Prabhupada is manifesting that in so many ways. Next slide. Then we have a picture of Prabhupada, a famous picture of Prabhupada talking on the dictaphone and dictating his books. And so there it is. So many magic mantras, so many. We're doing the Bhakti by Baba, trying to do it. And of course, the administration's overwhelming us in some ways, and the schedule and get together. So sometimes we forget the real thing is to relish, the Bhaktivedanta purports, to feed on them, to take nutrition from them, like that, to appreciate them, to think about how we can apply them. Prabhupada, when he was in London, he said, "I'm working so hard in my old age, producing these books, so that after I'm gone, you can sit together and discuss the purports and become happy." Like that. So there it is. How many pages of happiness and different kinds of happiness for different people. Different people on different levels and different kind of consciousness like that. And so we need to know this, so we can show people how to appreciate, Prabhupada's purports, translations, like that, according to their particular situation and their need, and produce so many more books, so many specific topics where we need to extract things and do indexes on different topics, Vedabase.com, wonderful. I see our disciple, Prahlad Nishringa, a wonderful person, but the idea is to do an index, but do an index that would be, for example, it's like the Wikipedia almost. It'd be an in-depth index, where, for example, if you look for Rupa Goswami, it would tell you, if you look for D, it would say, what are you looking for? For cooking or for fire sacrifice, So some professional people is helping you do an index. So then there's so much shelter, from Prabhupada's books. Next slide. And here you have it also. Here's the same picture. Here's Prabhupada with his bead bag, chanting, and his books, Next slide. And then, of course, Prabhupada's disciples, our godbrothers. And so, myself, we would be like senior godbrothers. But I took initiation, Prabhupada's letter, accepted me as a disciple, was about 14th of November, something like that, 1974. I think it was 74, yeah. Yeah, 74, yeah. Because it said the actual sacrifice was after Rafi, after Christmas Marathon. So we actually got the news and got initiated in 75. But my association, I had almost very little, physical association with Prabhupada. But I was really able to associate with people who did have physical association with Prabhupada. And so the picture up here you see on top, Prabhupada talking, probably was in Germany. Because there's a Suchandra Brahmachari in the background, who's now Bhakti Bhushan Swami from Germany. And, of course, Hansa Duda, who was the person who founded everything, regenerated everything, like that. There's so many things there. And he was Grihastha then, with Mother Hemavati. So he came to Berkeley right after Prabhupada left his body. And we went through this whole, divine acharya thing. Zonal Acharya experience and everything else like that with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada left and Gurutava. And so many problems this way and that way, But still, even when Hansa Buddha was having his worst problems, And he was, what's one thing about it, he was like, even at most difficult times, he was very much a noble person. So he'd fallen into drinking, but he was just turning his liquor receipts into the treasure. Like, that's no, you know, no, what's the word, dissemblance. And I'm having problems, I'm buying some stout malt liquor and whatever, you know. And even still, he was just very conscious of Prabhupada. He said he was just so ashamed that he could never could not possibly come before Srila Prabhupada after he'd done all these things, you know, after Prabhupada left and so on. So even still, his association was in so many ways such a shelter to see somebody who has gone through such intense experiences with Prabhupada, everything else, and his position like that. You know? We see our godbrothers, our different devotee association, and they may be conditioned by different experiences. You know? Hansaduda was almost an orphan, not an orphan, well, almost. He was a refugee right after the World War II in Germany with his mother, brother, and sister. And his brother even died during all that. But you can imagine the food, you know, and the transportation, and the common, you know, it was all just somehow or other you had to sometimes push and shove to be able to save your sister and mother's life. And his father would just go off and look for food for days and come back with just a little bit of food, you know. So he went through all these experiences, and you begin to understand, you know, how he approaches Prabhupada and did such many wonderful things and had many wonderful problems. So by Prabhupada, Jayananda, he's down in the middle, and Bhakti Subhadamadar, my sannyas guru, you know, with me, these were three principal forms of physical association with Prabhupada and how to give Prabhupada shelter. Understanding, you know, how Prabhupada dealt with people, and because I knew them. I knew them. I lived with them, everything else, Hansaduda, Jayananda, and Bhakti Sudama Maharaj. So I could do a lot to adjust their explanation of Prabhupada, like that. You know, Prabhupada said this and that, but Hansaduda sometimes would do things in terms he would, like, exploit Prabhupada's, you know, authority to get things done like that. He thought were proper, which other people didn't think were proper. So I knew he would do that. So therefore, when he would say things, I would consider, like, you know, who he was and how he would deal with things, you know. But then through Majjhima Madhikaris, you know, we can also get shelter, you know, if we can use them properly, you know, and keep the perspective of an acharya. And then a couple more pictures, and you know, one is very nice picture of Prabhupada leaning back against the asana, against the cushion, kind of happy. And just to be able to sit in Prabhupada's room, maybe, and see his lotus feet there, to sit at his lotus feet. And the other picture is a picture of Prabhupada with some little book. I can't read what it says. It's a little, like a pamphlet type book, maybe 20 pages glued by me or something. And Prabhupada's again, in his hand is a bead bag, but he's just absorbed in this little book, like, is it one of his books or something somebody else produced? You know, so that Prabhupada is not like a doctrine. You know, Prabhupada is a real transcendent, infinite person who has infinite interest in all kinds of different things. And life is interesting and fun and full of adventure and important things to be understood. You know, and so that's one thing of some of these pictures and different association stories. Take a step. But this is what a Vaikuntha man is like. Vaikuntha world is not a boring place where you sit and play on a harp like that and everything else. This is anything you can think of as interesting in this world is more interesting in that world. I think that we have, put out one more. And here we have a beautiful picture of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. Jai Ho, Haribo, Vande Guru, Sri Charanaravinda. And what a more better meditation picture. Just keep Srila Prabhupada's feet in our heart and count the number of toes like that. You know, make sure that the sand he's standing on in Vrindavan is just the right kind of experience to stimulate his feet. You know, yeah, rendering service at the lotus feet. Sometimes I think that all the grains of sand in Prabhupada's footprints are ISKCON, like that. Prabhupada's stepping and he's the dust, and he's leaving footprints, you know. And so that's when he steps, has to be personal, support him. So each one of those steps is a different ISKCON, a different universe like that. Nice. Next slide. And of course the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Yeah. Jayananda, he told us that Prabhupada said, as long as you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're making progress. Of course, sometimes Prabhupada says it will take hundreds of lifetimes if you don't, you know, give up, you know, smoking marijuana like that. You know. But still, you're making progress. And if you want to know how to make better progress, well, chant Hare Krishna. You know? And yeah, chant Hare Krishna, it will take you right into Prabhupada's classes. It will take you to look at the things you know with Urmila. Was making this point that Bhaktivinoda Thakur must have known a tremendous amount about the law, you know. So learning mundane knowledge is not mundane, you know. So chant Hare Krishna and all these things will become easier. Get up early and get your rounds done, your money, your health, your studies, everything will improve, you know. So much opportunity we have to take shelter of our 16 rounds. And then the whole day, Prabhupada says that Maya is waiting to catch you. Waiting, like the cat, you know, next to the hole, that's sitting there next to the hole in the wall there, waiting for the mouse to stick one whisker, you know, two whiskers, four whiskers, six whiskers, enough. So apt, yeah. Got him, you know. So the Prabhupada says that Maya is always waiting to catch us, you know. And the second we forget Krishna, and she can make us forget Krishna for 90 years, like Ajamil. You know, one slip. He said, how to always remember Krishna? By chanting 16 nice rounds a day. You get those nice rounds done early in the morning, you know, with good consciousness from your other sadhana. And then all day long, you'll be in touch with the Paramatma. And some Maya comes, you know, you'll feel, oh, watch out, danger, this is not good. You know, that's the Paramatma guiding us, warning us like that, and giving us perspective. And very finally, very last one is a quote from Isopanishad 17. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes. And let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices. And because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. So the purport publisher, this is the facility of the, you know, of the bhakti yogi has. Everybody else is trying to do it on their own, you know, but a devotee, he does it for Krishna. And then he can rightfully, you know, request Krishna, even though I may forget you, you know, please, you don't forget me. And so our shelter, no oxygen, we can take shelter, you know, of the shelter being offered. We can run under Govardhan Hill like that, or we can get behind the Sudarshan Chakra when Krishna is, you know, raising it up, you know, like that, or Uttara, running to Krishna. Or else we can also expect that even though we don't ask for it, because we asked for it before because Krishna needs it, he'll come and give us shelter. Of course, so many nice stories, that the famous story of this person died and saw his footprints in the sand, you know, going through all the different aspects of life like that. You know? And if some of the most difficult parts is only one set of footprints, because he saw all the rest of the places were two footprints. And when God had been with him the whole time. So then he was feeling a little bit upset that, well, my God, you abandoned me in these most difficult times. I kind of felt that way, you know. So then God was laughing. He said, there's only one set of footprints, not because I abandoned you, but because I had to carry you like that. This is, you know, our situation. Even if we forget, if we're devotees, then Krishna won't forget, you know, like that. And he'll carry us like that. Or else he'll give us a, you know, good sharp, you know, kick in the posterior to wake up. You know, oh, thank you, I needed that. Okay, that's the end of our slideshow. And basically, we're just focusing on this point, is that, you know, Krishna is giving shelter to the Pandavas. And he gives it in so many ways. If he's personally present, he could just, you know, whip his Sudarshan Chakra out and you know, cut all of the whatever they are, and the little pieces like that. or else to Prabhupada, to our God brothers, to Prabhupada's books, with Maha Mantra, through our rounds, there's so many ways, as Krishna's there, that when we should do that, we should try and take shelter of Krishna so we can do our service nicely, to Krishna, and go on improving it. So any comments, questions?
Maharaj, give me a minute to unmute everybody.
Okay. Mukham karoti vachalam. Mukham.
Okay, I have done that. I think that's coming mostly from you.
Yeah, go ahead and mute me. I'm having a problem getting to my mute spot. I'm out by the waterfall.
All right.
Oh. It sounds like a waterfall.
Okay. I was going to say that I really appreciated the point that you made about how Maya, we don't have to have a big fall down, all of a sudden, but rather Maya will come for us step by step, just a little bit of a deviation, a little bit of a deviation, just some small little thing until gradually.
Every day, a little bit.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, she's patient. And that's why it's nice. Vaisheshya come with a nirkula, I think they lock themselves up like on New Year's Day or something, and they sit there and they're together. It's a very nice couple. They go through, and I think they evaluate. They have goals, So they look at the goals from the last year, and they see, what did we do? And then they talk about it, and they make their goals for the next year, like that. So it's that good part, important part of life. I think everybody experienced that. Jamasami and Vasa Puja, I think probably everybody experienced that, if you've been a devotee for a long time. It's a real chance to, it forces you to stop and think about things. How are we doing? Like that, And you can see, I'm getting a little deviated.
So we have about, 27 devotees on still right now. Prabhu, does anyone have a question or a comment?
Okay, somebody else. Dandavats Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
It's Vidug Damodava Das.
I can tell you sound as young as ever, your voice.
Well,
yeah.
Anyway, you triggered something earlier in your talk, talking about the bees. I was hearing Prabhupada citing Srimad Bhagavatam on a class I was listening to, and he says Srimad Bhagavatam is predicting two things in Kali Yuga, and that first one was scarcity of food.
Especially fruit, huh?
No, scarcity of food.
But he also mentions that fruit will just be a seed with a skin, and all the, which is
right.
The bees are very famous for the fruit. Yeah.
And the other is the taxes will be raised. There'll be such a burden to the people that some people will actually flee their homes and run away to the forest to get away from the taxes. But losing the bees is probably part of food becoming more scarce. Like you were saying, at least 30% of what we eat is depending on pollination with these bees. And different people have different things to say online about that, but it's likely it's due to some agribusiness practices, because there's an incredible amount of chemical pollution going on with the pesticides, and it's all about growing, you making a buck. It's not even, it's just, and have you seen a film called Samsara?
No.
Ron Frick, he's a cinematic genius. He's done a film called Baraka. There's no voiceover. There's no... there's just soundtracks, music, backgrounds, and he has a 65 millimeter camera. It's a wide angle and a telephoto at the same time. It's twice the resolution of any movie. camera and or generally
telephoto wide angle. You know.
Yeah, but he it allows him to do a lot of candid shots. He gets away from the people with the camera, and sometimes he has them look into the camera. But he's a visual storyteller, and he goes all over the world. I mean, it's just amazing. If any of the devotees on the call, I recommend two films, Baraka, B-A-R-A-K-A. It's a Hopi word that means...
I saw them, too. They're totally unique to any film ever made, and Steven Spielberg uses them in his classes to teach.
Right.
So they're incredible.
Yeah. So anyway, samsara is the reason. When, and samsara. Now he kind of recycles some of the stuff from Baraka in samsara, and I think the devotees could, you know, conceptually do something better. But one thing that came to me watching, you know, the footage of the factories. He likes to show assembly lines and. And he also includes the slaughterhouse industry with that, but not the kill floor or anything, but just things going by and they're doing things. It's all mechanical. And it struck me watching the samsara that all this industrial slaughterhouse business, you know, all this inhumane cruelty to animals, it's just like the agribusiness has forced the small farms out of, you know, America, and they've taken over the food production and basically set up America.
No more villages.
So, and Prabhupada was all about village and, you know, Vedic village. And because we've gotten away from the land and we've allowed these people to make it some corporate profit thing. This is, you know, it's all about money. They don't care for nothing. And it's basically about feeding people in cities.
Yeah,
you know, like the British made the railroads.
Or feeding beef cows. That's amazing how much of the food actually goes to beef cows.
Right. Yeah, the whole thing is skewed. You know, even the government subsidizes the meat industry to make fast food the cheapest food on the planet rather than, you know, an organic, you know, healthy food is the most expensive. So it's really, really bizarre.
Wow.
But the thing that struck me when I was listening to you also say that the scientists, you know, they're looked at as the possible heroes to get us out of this mess. They're the ones that are getting us into this mess.
Right,
and they've created disastrous nuclear technology, and they have no solution for nuclear waste, none. So how short-sighted is that?
Yeah.
And they support destructive industrial, corporate, and military interests that grossly pollute the earth. You know, it's the water we drink, the air we all breathe, it's all being polluted by these people. And they ignore the
natural. Isu Upanishad Prabhupada calls them the Maya, what's it called, the Maya Pahita Gyanas. They're more intelligent, they know the Vedas, they know this kind of thing, that kind of thing. And they use their knowledge to take everybody else to hell, you know, faster and deeper. So,
right.
So in any case, it's the Brahmanas, you know, who are behind a lot of this, using their potency, you know, to befuddle and to empower the Vaishyas to do stupid things. You know, it's interactive, but the Brahmanas also, intellectuals, have a lot of, you know, guilt, you know, in not acting properly themselves, communicating and standing up for the truth and so on.
Right. So it's amazing that they're still respected. And
Kali Yuga, I guess, huh?
And that some people hold up some hope for some techno fix, that these people are going to be smart enough to, you know, to save us from the horrors they are creating. It's bizarre.
Well, you're gonna, to do it, you're going to tax people more to pay for it. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, we saved your food, but you're going to have to pay a special tax to produce this high-tech genetically engineered spray, which we got to spray every 3 months, you know, and to keep the planet with bananas. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Right.
I guess from our perspective thing, the only thing is that even us, and myself too, I want to stay on the earth and enjoy sense gratification, you know, and ISKCON and this and that, you know. But if I'm forced to live on sweet potatoes rather than bananas, which apparently is not going to happen, you know, there's no more bananas pretty soon. No. But okay, even myself is going to push me to start being a sane guy too, you know, like that. Yeah. Shelter. Jayananda was always, he's saying, you know, all these things happen to us, one thing or another. He says the devotee always has an ace in the hole. There's a yandic and there's always this chant, Hare Krishna. You know? But, that's my experience of the year too, is that when we do that, we realize how much attached we are. How little reciprocation we have with the Holy Name, you know? How we're chanting and stuff, in most cases it's for celestial pleasures or something like that, some perspective, a little bit of relief, but when everything really starts to go away, you know, time, space, everything else, how much real attachment do we have, real shelter do we have with the Holy Names like that? Yeah. Die. So Paul Padaki died.
Yeah, but we could also write some things about this. I mean, I'm annoyed by articles I'm reading online. One guy had an article that reached mainstream headlines, news. Atheists are more intelligent than religionists, studies show.
Yeah.
You know, so what kind of intelligence do these people have? I mean, given us, you know, so much ammunition against these people that are showing anything but intelligence.
Yeah. I guess the same thing you said before is that, you know, we glorify all the scientists for getting out of the mess. We forget, we're so stupid, we forget just 2 seconds before. Here's the guys that created the whole problem.
Yeah.
Well, in Kali Yuga, this is in Kali Yuga, if anybody... What is it? Anybody, what is it, takes a bath and combs his hair or something, he'll be fit to go in public. Nothing else will be required, but if he has a bath and combs his hair, he'll be considered to be like, you know, a respectable gentleman.
Right.
And whatever Brahmana says in Kali Yuga will be accepted as truth, like that, because he has the qualifications. He won't even investigate anything more than his, you know, peacefulness and this and that, his intelligence. Yeah. Wow. I guess I should get going here. My battery's about to die now. My cell phone here, I'm getting a little beeping sound. You know? So, well, thank everybody, and I guess next week we'll be back in Tennessee, and I guess maybe we'll be there. There should be a little better connection like that. You know? But thank everybody so much for your association. This is nice going through these first candles like that. And they're so penetrating. You know, you start to go in. So what's happening next is three verses away. This is a First Canto, Chapter 8, so it's 1-8. The starting verse number 1-8, verse number 18, starts the prayers by Queen Kunti. And of course, Prabhupada, he gave lectures on those three times around the world like that. You know? So this is going to be a fantastic section in the prayers by Queen Kunti. So thank you all very much. All going to the Prabhupada.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As you said, Hare
Krishna.
Jai Shri Prabhupada.
Before everybody goes, let remind you all, tomorrow is Ekadashi, and also Mother Ermila has given the last part of her three-part seminar. Okay? Hope you all heard that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.